Now on Night Beat, President Trump caves, reversing course on his policy that was tearing apart parents and children at the border. But tonight, there's a catch. Good evening. I'm Ken Bastida.
And I'm Elizabeth Cook. Night Beat's Andrea Borba is in the newsroom with more on what the president's executive order can and cannot do. Andrea?
Well, Ken and Elizabeth, the policy change stops families from being separated in the future, but offers no plan to reunite those already ripped apart.
President Trump signed an executive order rescinding his administration's policy that separated parents and children trying to cross the U.S. border.
We're going to keep the families together. I didn't like the sight or the feeling of families being separated. At the same time, we are keeping a very powerful border, and it continues to be a zero tolerance. We have zero tolerance for people that enter our country illegally.
The president's zero-tolerance immigration policy announced in May mandated universal prosecution of adults who enter the country illegally. Under long-standing law, children cannot remain with adults being detained on criminal charges. Outrage even came from Mr. Trump's typically supportive base. This radio spot from the Christian conservative group Colson Center aired on 600 stations around the country.
Families should not be separated. Parents shouldn't break the law with their children. And children shouldn't be punished for their parents breaking the law.
Today's executive order is not retroactive, and there is no telling when families already separated will be reunited. And the order still puts the onus on Congress for a permanent fix.
We're going to see what happens.
In San Francisco tonight, in honor of World Refugee Day, speakers representing war-torn nations around the globe spoke at the war memorial, including the Deputy Consul General of Mexico, who delivered this message.
While every country has the right to decide and implement its own migration and border policies, this should be done within the framework of the international law and naturally with the full respect of the human rights of the migrants.
Now, the action does not end the administration's zero-tolerance policy that has led to more than 2,000 children being separated from their parents. Under the order, families will now be together for 20 days. Beyond that, it is possible they could be split up again as they wait for their fate through the courts. On the Night Beat, I'm Andrea Borba.
Some new video tonight shows a Bay Area man scaling the White House fence. Now, take a look. According to the Mercury News, the man in red is 29-year-old Alexander Miner. He's from Walnut Creek. His family reported him missing 2 weeks ago. You can see the Secret Service quickly moving in on him before taking him into custody on Monday. The White House went on lockdown for about 15 minutes. Miner is now facing two federal charges, including attempted burglary. He apparently told investigators he was ordered by God to punch the president in the face. Miner is expected to undergo a mental health evaluation in the next few days.
A nasty crash a block from San Francisco City Hall tonight. A minivan ran a red light at Golden Gate and Polk and slammed into an Uber driver. Firefighters, some with axes, had to cut the roof off that black SUV to get everyone out. At least five people were hurt. None of the injuries are life-threatening.
Well, first, a Golden State killer. Tonight, there's word of a break in the case of another serial killer who terrorized the Bay Area. Night Beat's Joe Vasquez is live in San Francisco's Castro tonight. Joe?
Yeah, Ken, this was back in the early 70s when you had a couple more better known serial killers, the Zebra and the Zodiac. But here in the Castro, there was another guy who was killing people. His name was the Doodler. He was nicknamed the Doodler because the serial killer sketched each of his victims before killing them. 14 men, all believed to be gay, were murdered in San Francisco from January 1974 to September 1975. Bodies were found on Ocean Beach, Spreckles Lake in Golden Gate Park, near the 16th tee at the Lincoln Park Golf Course.
We were scared to death. We were scared to death because it's like, you know, you don't know who it is.
CNN is now reporting San Francisco police have identified a suspect. The detective on the case tells CNN he is going to release an updated sketch of the suspected serial murder, one that shows him more than 40 years older. The detective says he is still working with DNA to nail down some evidence. there were three survivors of the doodlers' attacks. When police arrested a suspect at the time, they had to let him go because all the survivors refused to publicly testify at a time when gay men could not afford to come out of the closet.
What would have happened if somebody would have come out of the closet?
You could be terminated. You get terminated from your job. You could lose your family.
The police detective told CNN that he's still trying to track down those three survivors to see if they are still around and might be willing to testify now. San Francisco police are not confirming the story to us, but they are planning to hold a news conference. Reporting live on the Night Beat, I'm Joe Vasquez.
Of course, this all comes as the city is celebrating Pride Month. San Francisco City Hall lit up in rainbow colors tonight. Events leading up to this weekend's big Pride parade get underway in just a matter of hours. We stopped by the SF Pride office today. Organizers were getting ready for Media Day tomorrow and several other events over the next couple of days. Police are urging people to sign up for emergency alert text messages ahead of Sunday's big parade. And you can sign up by texting SF Pride to this number, 888-777.
New calls tonight for a San Francisco police officer to be fired. Body camera video shows him shooting a suspect on a crowded sidewalk. The shots were fired by Officer Joshua Cabillo, a 5-year veteran of the force. It happened in North Beach a week and a half ago. The suspect is still in the hospital. Earlier today, we spoke with the family of a man who was killed by Officer Cabillo 6 years ago in South San Francisco. The aunt of Derek Gaines says the 15-year-old was shot in a similar fashion. She says Cabillo needs to be fired before more people are hurt or killed.
I'm wondering, I'm pulling him off of the streets. How many boys have to be hurt before they remove him? I don't even think there's counseling or educating him. He's a loose cannon.
Officer Cabillo was cleared in the shooting death of Gaines. He's now on administrative leave while the SFPD investigates this latest shooting.
Environmental activist Aaron Brockovich is joining the legal team suing PG&E over the Wine Country wildfires. She attended a meeting in Santa Rosa last night. Brockovich will be a consultant. The utility company is accused of not properly maintaining infrastructure and being unprepared for the high winds. 44 people died in those fires last fall. 9,000 homes were destroyed. Brockovich gained notoriety for taking on PG&E back in the 1990s. There was a $333 million settlement in that case, and her story was later turned into an Oscar-winning film.
San Mateo County is suing a major local drug distributor and blaming it for fueling the opioid crisis. The county is taking on three companies, including San Francisco-based McKesson. Lawyers claim there is a pattern of drug distributors ignoring clear signs of abuse. There are more than 150 drug-related deaths in San Mateo County over the past 2 years. More than 40 were directly related to opioids. The county wants to be repaid for how much the opioid crisis has cost taxpayers instead of penalties and fines.
There are hundreds, not thousands, of families affected by these drugs. And it does cost a lot of money for taxpayers to help these individuals and families.
How much money do you think taxpayers have had to shell out due to opioid-related issues?
Well, we're calculating the exact numbers, but it's certainly tens of millions of dollars a year.
McKesson says it does not comment on pending litigation.
Also today, hundreds of men in San Jose ditched their shoes and donned stilettos instead. Night Beat's Maria Medina explains how the high-heeled men took a step to end violence against women.
They smiled, laughed, and took pictures as they walked a mile in high heels. But for some of the hundreds of men who took part in the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event to raise awareness and money to end violence against women.
You don't talk about it back then.
Their motivation to be here was very personal.
I came from a family where my mom got married at 15. She was abused physically and sexually.
When I was a child, I saw physical abuse. It was my aunt and my uncle hitting my aunt.
What goes through your mind as a child when you see something like that?
I can't believe that's the uncle that I love, doing that to the aunt that I love. That's one of the reasons why I'm walking here. And I don't want to ever have my two teenage daughters see anything like that.
And this year, organizers say they are breaking records in the wake of the Me Too movement nationally, and locally, the recall of Judge Aaron Persky. The event today attracted San Jose's city leaders, law enforcement, and sporting teams.
This is unprecedented levels of participation, unprecedented levels of support. The community is coming together, and there's a resounding message.
Just a little bling to make it special.
For Kevin Jensen, who is now retired from law enforcement, he says every chance to take action is a step further to end violence against women.
I'm doing this for a lot of reasons. I'm doing it for law enforcement, doing the right thing for women like my mom, who maybe didn't get a chance to speak up.
The goal was to raise $145,000 for survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. The YWCA raised much more, a total of about $179,000. On the Nightbeat, I'm Marie Medina.